Okay, we are plugged in for the last show of the year. It's Friday the 30th of December. Unbelievable. It's gone quick, and our listeners can, of course, go to the website, crazfiles.com, C-R-A-Z-Z, and look, everything's there, you know, everything's up there, videos and tons of podcasts and links to social media. Please comment on there. You can. There's a comments bar. People can see what you. I wanted to sort of get people commenting, if I could, you know. So anything that goes up, podcasts like today. If you agree, if you don't, comment. You know, talk. They go up for people to see. You know, create your own blog over there and go and have a look. Sophia Smallstorm is back on the show today. So great to have you, Sophia, again. You've been doing this podcast with me for ages now, a few years at least. So always good to chat with you. How are you going?
I don't know if I've been doing this for a few years, Adam. Maybe I have.
A couple of years, at least a couple. Yeah.
Just yesterday. But anyway, no, thank you very much for inviting me back, especially for the last show of the year.
As I said, it's a bit of a heat wave here, very hot. So, you know, makes you very tired, and you know, you're having the opposite in California, which is amazing. Seems cooler over there for you, so that's good. Cooler weather is a nice thing as well. I'm a bit sick of the heat here, but trying my best. But it's, as I said, it's great to catch up with you. Let's talk a bit about yourself and what you've been up to. I do want to go over your website again today. It's something I've been going through a lot, and I wanted to get that information out. I'm going to put that up today, of course, with this show. But as I just said to you before I started recording, you are moving very fast. And, you know, you're like probably one of my favorite researchers in the world. Your information is really striking. It really is. And when you put out stuff, I listen absolutely. And I know a lot of people enjoy it. How's it been going for you this year? Are you, you feel like you're speeding up with the information that you're able to put out? Or is it still the same motion?
Well, you know, Adam, the more you learn, the more you can start to put pieces together that, because you have this big body of knowledge. And one of the things about abstract thinking is that you have to hold disparate, meaning different, things in your mind for long periods of time. People call it spatial thinking as well. It's not linear thinking. We're taught in the schools simply to do this very boring, very repetitive linear thinking. But people, human beings, in their true essence, are abstract thinkers. They hold bits and pieces in their minds, and then the older they get and the more they learn, they can fit those bits and pieces together. And that's really what I'm doing. The longer I've been immersed in this alternative research world, and the more I, you know, dig into different things, and it's all kind of random. It's what comes across my desk and into my inbox, what other people are working on. You know, there's kind of like a cosmic flow to it, you could say. And I just, the more I learn, the more I say, oh, this thing fits with this thing. And I guess I'm just fitting these things in ways that other people have not done yet, some of these things. And so that's what makes it interesting for my followers, if you want to call them that. But, you know, it's just mental processing and adding stuff up, because you've held it in your mind forever and it hasn't connected to anything until, boom, now you can connect it. So I did start with this issue of this concept of biological darkness and what I call the sepsis agenda. I think that's what you wanted to discuss in today's show. And the concept itself is a big one, but it's easy to understand. And it has to do with light. We are warm-blooded creatures that thrive in full daylight. At night, we go to sleep, our body does repairs. At night, around us in the world, there are creatures sometimes very small, minuscule, microscopic creatures that get to work and they disassemble and decompose natural life, in many cases natural life which is dead or dying, in order to render it into nutrient form so that during the daylight hours, the trophic chain can mobilize using those nutrients and building itself and its members up again. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, absolutely.
So there are frequencies during the night. Many people have noticed that the light of the moon is qualitatively different from the light of the sun. And the flat earth studies, followers came up with this moonlight sunlight difference. Moonlight feels very cold. Moonlight is silver. It actually promotes putrefaction and disintegration and deterioration. It promotes what is also known as sepsis. Sepsis means infection, bacterial activity. And sunlight is a natural disinfectant. Sunlight is antiseptic. It is warm. It is golden. It is life-giving. And when you look at the cycle of day and night, and then you look at the seasons, we actually get to split the sunlight and the nighttime lack of light, or the moonlight, which comes, you know, in its own measured quantities during the night. We split that basically 50-50. So this sepsis-antisepsis cycle is necessary to biological life. Yet, I made this connection that the agendas that are being foisted on us are promoting, and I think most people would agree, tremendous degeneration in our bodies and in biology, the biological world. We're seeing tree decline as a consequence of chemtrail spraying. We're seeing, you know, all kinds of decline of species from pollution, and from the farming methods are changing not only the soil, but they're changing the plants. The plants have to be, they don't recycle themselves in the same way. They have to be replanted. They're non-reproductive, basically. So the qualities and the vibrancy and the essence of true biology is all being stalled and disassembled and made to cave in upon itself. And I call this the sepsis agenda. And I related it to this whole light of Lucifer. We're told that the people who perpetrate this stuff on us are satanic Luciferians. I think we can see that this enormous spread of pedophilia, pedophilic activities and pedophilia is so rampant. And this is part of the whole Luciferian practice. And these people call themselves light worshippers, light bringers. Illuminati means the illuminated. This is the other kind of light. This is the light of sepsis. This is the light of darkness. They do all their rituals during the night. They cavort under the moon. They dress in black. They live underground. They're building this whole underworld. So I call them the agents of sepsis. And we, the warm-blooded, life-seeking creatures, we need the sun. That's the real light. The real light comes with thermal energy. Heat is a component of real daylight, and that kicks off not only just the production of vitamin D in your body, which does all kinds of things for your benefit and health, but daylight, real daylight with thermal energy in it, kicks off hundreds and hundreds of biochemical exchanges in our bodies that we absolutely need. So we need that sun cycle, and we're being immersed in an extended night cycle. And the photobiologist Alexander Wunsch from Germany says that if you don't experience enough daylight, if your eyes don't receive the frequencies of daylight and your body doesn't receive the thermal energy along with it, then you miss on so many biological activities. Your body is simply failing to do hundreds and hundreds of critical things on a daily basis. And so you're effectively living in biological darkness. And this hit me like a ton of bricks.
Wow, yeah, that's absolutely. Oh, I can't think of anything. I don't agree there. And looking at the geoengineering thing, it was just amazing. I took some video and photos 2 days ago. It was astonishing. It really was. It, just in the Sydney Basin area, was outstanding. I've never seen so much spraying in the atmosphere in my life. I took these incredible video, and I'll send you some photos. It actually, the sprays had all these colors in them, like rainbow type colors as well. And no one was seeing it. No one. I had to stop the car, and I was just out there on the road filming this whole scenario. No, not one person was looking at that. And just a day or so before, I was noting that we almost had this sort of desert weather, and the skies were so blue, and the sun was out. Of course, in Australia, we are sun worshippers. I mean, we love the sun down here, you know, and I do myself. But I'm hoping that people are seeing this film, because it the other day, 2 days ago, it really looked to me like a film was put over the sky by the early afternoon, and I could see the blue sky underneath, but it just looked like a film that had been put over the top. I don't know if I'm correct, but I'm definitely noticed a dimming with this. So could you go into that a little bit? Is that sort of the main reason, do you think, that they're putting this stuff in the atmosphere? Is it all about sort of dimming and stopping that amount of sunlight that we're getting? Is that, or is that just part of it?
Your guess is as good as mine, Adam. I would say that's part of it. What they do when they lay this haze out is they actually create a frequency change. And I'm not talking about anything, you know, any new age type cosmic frequency. I'm saying literally the light frequency changes. You're getting a bluer, whiter light. This is the light of sepsis. This is how they convert the warm, antiseptic, health-giving, life-giving yellow light of the sun into the white light of the moon.
Is it bright? Do you find it brighter? Is that a weird thing to say? It just seems after when they've done this sort of spraying, I sort of walk outside and I have to use my sunglasses more than if it was a blue day. It just seems like this weird brightness. But it feels like they're dimming things. It's hard to explain.
I would call it glare.
Glare,
there's a lot of
yeah.
particulate in the atmosphere when you get that white haze, and it's reflective and it creates much more glare.
That's right.
So, yeah. But honestly, overall, there are many agendas in place, and they're all promoting darkness, and they're all promoting degeneration of physical well-being in all species, honestly.
Absolutely. I mean, I don't think people quite understand how important the sunlight is. It's just amazing to see a day like a warm day you would get here, and you get like this huge dump of rain or thunderstorm. We have like thunderstorm sort of flowers and medicinal plants that come out just during thunderstorms as well, where they can harvest this energy in them. And you watch this these rains come down and the thunder. I've had that a bit here, and then the sun come out again, and you can almost see you know, the grass and everything twitching and moving and growing. It's amazing, that reaction. I know you swim in the ocean as well, and being under the sun, it's just nothing better. And looking at what these, I don't know what to call them anymore, I'll just say creatures, but whatever's doing this, it does seem like a slow cancer, a slow degeneration of the planet. And it's hard for me to get the proper information. I go on to many great sites like Geoengineering Watch, for example, and others, and look at information you're putting out. I'm hearing of big forest die-off in the US in particular, where, you know, large tracts of forest are just dying off, and you know, this all comes into play with you, what you're talking about, because all the years that I've been studying geoengineering and just thinking to myself, why is this being done? Like, what's really going on here? Then I got your biological darkness thing, you know, and it just really, really makes sense. It seems that's what's happening. It's almost like, in a strange way, we're being brought into a more favorable environment to be fed on, you know, and it's just, it's unbelievable. It really is. And there's so many implications here. But your biological darkness, the way that you explain it, and I'm going to put up another video as well, so people can get it, because you've done another talk on this, on another show, so people can get another aspect of the conversation. But this is really a crazy thing. Are you seeing this in California? Because I know they're spraying a lot there. I'm seeing a lot of people on the internet, in Facebook pages, saying they're not seeing the spraying as much anymore, that they're doing other things. And we've got to look at getting a lot of spooky things in Australia as well, which I'm sure you heard about, with these asthma thunderstorms in Melbourne. They had like this asthma thunderstorm that's what they called, well, the pollen was taken up and put everywhere and made all these people drop like flies, but that doesn't make sense at all. And we're hearing about these kind of chem bombs they're letting off out to sea, and it's coming inland, and people are getting sick. But as I said the other day, I'm seeing a huge spraying as well, but other people are saying they're doing it less now. What's your take on the geoengineering in the US and in California where you are? Are you noticing an increase, or is it just still steady the way they're doing it? Have they changed in any way on how they're implementing the sprays?
Adam, the spraying varies from month to month, season to season. As you know, the spraying has to collect atmospheric moisture in order to form droplets. People who claim to be interested in chemtrails have to buckle down and study how these trails are formed. The scientist Daniel Rosenfeld was the first to publish, I believe, this thesis or theory that pollution stops rain. So if you study how a raindrop forms in the air, it's because of a nucleus formed of a material that attracts condensation to it. They're called condensation nuclei. So condensation nuclei are often in nature dust particles or salt. Salt comes off the ocean, dust comes off the land. And when it's airborne, these little particulates, particles, they collect ambient moisture, because dust and salt have an attraction, an affinity for moisture. So that's how a raindrop is built. And then when the drop gets bigger and bigger, collecting more and more atmospheric moisture, it becomes unstable. The drops can gather and form clouds in, you know, large numbers together. And when the water descends to the earth in the form of rain, it's because the drop has now become large and heavy, and it starts to come down to the earth. Now, we know that there's no gravity, and we know that things that come down because of electromagnetic charge. I don't understand this fully, but electromagnetic charge is the unifying cotter pin theory of the entire world we live in. Everything happens because of electromagnetic charge. I just learned recently, and I'm looking into this more and trying to understand it, the heart is not a pump. The heart doesn't pump your blood. We're always told the heart pumps. You have heartbeats approximately 60 to 70 every minute, and they pump the blood through the arteries to all of your cells. Well, no. The heart is it's a huge battery. It gives the blood a big charge, an electrical charge, and then the blood starts to spiral out through the aorta into the arteries, which this is my theory, keep recharging the blood. The blood is electric. So we're all electric. Everything in the world is electric and electromagnetic. When electric current runs, when voltage is moving, it's causing an electromagnetic field. And the electromagnetic fields all over the planet determine how life thrives and what it does. So to get back to the raindrops, when they spray particulates, very small size particulates into the sky, the air, those particulates will draw atmospheric moisture. They have to make sure that the particulate has an affinity for moisture. This is why they use these things that we refer to as metallic salts. And I'm not going to explain why they're called metallic salts, but aluminum oxide, barium oxide, titanium oxide, these are all called metallic salts. And so these particulates up suspended in the air bring the atmospheric moisture to them and they create the white haze. And what Rosenfeld determined from his studies of pollution was that the smaller the particle, the more stable the droplet. Remember that the heavier the droplet gets, then it falls to the earth in the form of rain. So these artificial particulates are very small and they create this white haze. They fan out of the trail that starts them and then they create the white haze and the streaky clouds. Now I'm going to tell you something. I was watching a movie on television a few weeks ago and it was it was like a historical fiction thing set in biblical days. It was the story of King David and Bathsheba. This is a very, it's an age-old story from straight out of the Bible. And can you believe it? This thing was in color, this movie. Do you know what was in the sky?
Lines.
Well, they did a little better than showing us lines from planes, which they could have done. They were the streaky clouds, the chemtrail clouds, in biblical days.
There you go.
And in somewhat parallel lines, but kind of mushed out, and I was laughing. I was literally rolling on the floor laughing, thinking, they really are working hard to get us to believe this stuff.
Putting it into the old movies?
Yeah, I mean, it was an old-ish movie. It wasn't, my point is, the movie is set in biblical time.
Yeah, well, I've heard the same thing, but there you go. You've actually, I've seen that a little bit as well, but not movies like that. There you go. That's desperate behavior.
Here's King David looking out his window to see Bathsheba, and he's seeing a camp sky.
Ay, ay, ay. My goodness. I don't know what to say to this anymore. I really don't. It's just staggering. It really is. I don't know what to tell people. I don't know if I care if they care. I feel like just walking up and throwing a hot cup of coffee in their face. Just screaming at them, wake up. How can you not see that? Sitting here in the street drinking coffee on a Saturday, and how can you not see what they're doing above your head? I mean, anybody can see that. It is disgusting. I sent the pictures I took around, and people said, that is disgusting. It just stringy, disgusting, stretched chewing gum soup. You could see it being put everywhere. I'm like, how can you not? My only thing I can think of is they're putting stuff in that's making the blind more blinder. I don't know. I think that once you have the will to see this stuff, they can't stop you almost. It's like you just keep seeing through it. I just keep seeing it and seeing it. I don't know, but it's like they just don't see it, Sophia. I don't know what to say. I really don't anymore. It's 2017 next year, and they're sitting there eating muffins and drinking coffee under this. I don't understand how they're not seeing it, because it's far from normal.
They would not start stressing out or keep stressing out about the fact that people aren't seeing it. The more familiar they become with it, the less they're going to see it. So don't, you know, wear yourself out, and let's get on with some of this biological darkness issue, shall we?
I want to, I want to bring in just something here that, because I've been researching this a long time, and you mentioned so many things I can't go through today. One really important thing that I've been trying to look at, but it is quite a deep subject, is vitamin D or vitamin D3. Obviously, you know, this is obviously extremely important. You know, our bodies are making this. And I kind of fell into this a little while ago with this Dr. Bradsheet. You would have seen this, and a lot of this came out about the vaccines with this nagalase ingredient. They're injecting, you know, our children, of course, and it's interfering with the body's being able to produce these proteins that make vitamin D. And they're finding high concentrations of this nagalase in autistic children and sick children, obviously, from the vaccines. So this is another assault on the human body, other than the sun, where they're putting injections into children, mainly anyone they can, that is stopping the body from producing the proper proteins to make the vitamin D. And here as well with the biological darkness, that's a very obvious factor here, that, you know, if that's happening and we're not getting the correct sunlight through, and our bodies aren't able to produce the vitamin D3, you know, like they're supposed to, then you're going to get, as you said, sepsis. You're going to get all the disease rates coming in, triggering in. Absolutely, you know, I would link it to everything. I know, and the amazing thing here is, I'm seeing it again, and it makes me mad. But people are just smearing this chemical sun cream all over their bodies, and what I'm noticing, as you were saying before, Sylvia, where you're connecting the dots, I'm watching this vitamin D3. It's a massive thing happening. We're getting, I don't know if you would say it's Agenda 21 or Agenda 2030. It's definitely coming through the schools and councils and government. They are trying to scare the hell out of everybody about even going in the sun. And I see that a lot here in Australia, and they're using, because it is Australia and it is a warm country and the sun's dangerous and all of this. But it's amazing. I was just walking through the school the other day, and they have all these huge posters up everywhere, you know, almost saying that kids have to wear hats now. And I'm seeing it a lot in 2016, where they're almost saying, you know, they're not allowed to sort of go outside without these hats and all this sun cream on. Which is mind blowing, and Australia is a beach culture, so a lot of people do obviously just go straight in the water. But I've seen a lot of young people slopping all this chemical cream all over their bodies. I don't know if I told you about the metal roofing. I can tell you that later. Getting damaged from the nano particulates in the creams, but the kids are putting all this cream on, Sophia, and hats, and they're being vaccinated. And they're not getting the correct sunlight, and we're being microwaved. It's just unbelievable. And I'm wondering, you know, what this is going to do on our bodies. Just this blocking our bodies from making the vitamin D as they should, because, you know, you get some sunshine and you just glow. You know, you glow pink. You feel so fantastic. You can see people when they've got a bit of sun on their skin. It just, it glows this most beautiful pink color, you know, and all these kids, they're definitely looking very pale, like little Draculas walking around, you know, and they're not getting the sun that they need. And I'm seeing these new posters up everywhere for where the Sydney buses go around. There's big, huge posters up with like a sun and a woman with her brain exposed, and it's saying the sun damages your brain and all of this stuff. So there is, of course, here with the biological darkness, they are making people scared of the sun. And fear it, that's going to give them cancer and give them terminal melanoma and all of this stuff, and damage their brain and damage their children. And this is a heavy factor to weigh into this as well.
So your skin contains melanocytes. Those are cells that make up the pigment melanin. Melanin is a biopolymer. it gives your skin strength and structure. People who are exposed to more sunlight in terms of their location tend to have more melanin. And it takes those people with the darker skin, melanin is a dark pigment, longer to make vitamin D than it takes people who are light-skinned. Light-skinned people have less melanin and therefore they have a more transparent skin, skin that injures more easily. But melanin itself has the ability to convert ultraviolet radiation and thermal radiation, convert ultraviolet into thermal, that is, or heat. So it changes one kind of energy into another. So melanin is a protective biopolymer in the skin. And we need this thing called sunlight. It actually enhances brain function. It all the things that they're telling us that it does, it's the opposite. So you need the full light spectrum. Some of these new light bulbs that they're pushing now do not give you the thermal component with light. They give you only a certain limited wavelengths, and incandescent bulbs, by contrast, give you the full light spectrum. So does firelight, so does sunlight. So we need that kind of light energy coming right in our eyes.
Firelight as well, you mentioned.
Yes,
like firelight. Having a fire and staring into it.
Right, light and heat. That's what you need, light plus heat. You don't need the cold, light, bluish light of fluorescence. That's the light of sepsis.
It's the light in morgues.
Sorry?
In morgues. It's this, or office buildings, people work in offices all day under this artificial light. They're getting skin cancers. That's just a fact, but you speak to people, you know, I grew up with a lot of people in the sun and work out in the sun, they don't have them. They're telling you the opposite.
The sun toughens your skin. The sun, melanocytes toughen your skin.
Yeah, we got these, got a lot of elderly people in their 80s or 90s and they go to the beach every day and I always say they look like leather handbags, you know, their skin, they look like leather handbags walking around. They're just so leathery and brown. They, you know, swim every day and stay in the water and under the sun every single day. And they're pretty fit.
Well, they're seeking sunlight because it enhances their health.
That's right. So
when they put us in these artificially lit interiors and we don't get enough sunlight, these are the people, the office workers, the people who slather themselves with the sunscreen, which contains a ton of petrochemical material. They use nano zinc, they use titanium oxide and dioxide. Now, my online store, Avatar Products, has a sunblock called Bali Block. I was actually the one that named it, that has only four ingredients, Adam, and it's excellent. If you want to put any sunblock on your skin or sunscreen, I would use that because it's just zinc oxide, 25%, coconut oil. It's tinted with cocoa. There's a dark tint, and then there's vanilla and beeswax. So it's waterproof. You can use it all day long. And it nourishes the skin. And there are places where you might want to put some sunscreen on, places that the skin is thinner and it tends to fry a little more. If you're in the sun a lot and you're pale, you know, you tend to be Caucasian or white, bridge of the nose, tips of the ears. Those are areas where you could use sunscreen. But the dermatology world tells you you should use, if you can believe it, an ounce of sunscreen all over your body every single day. And that, not only is it expensive, but you're plastering your body with a lot of artificial chemicals. And your skin won't sweat. It doesn't get to hydrate properly or sweat. And, you know, you have the chemical component there. That's, I mean, there are people who say that's what gives you the skin cancer.
Absolutely. Absolutely. These guys out there, you know, going to the beach or surfing, they just need a paintbrush. They're putting so much on. They must put a liter of this stuff on. I'm just sitting there shaking my head. And, you know, but that's what they're told to do. This was an interesting... I think I've mentioned this before to you, but they tried to sort of cover it up as much as they could. It was a study in Australia about sunscreens exposed, stripping away the gloss. So it was with these students at a college called Trinity and another organization called Friends of the Earth. They did a citizen science experiment looking at the effects of Australian popular sunscreens. It's the ones most people use on Colorbond steel roofing. So these are steel roofing. They're called Colorbond, you know, supposed to be last forever. People use in Australia for the harsh climate, and was kind of damaging the roof in parts, and that's what originally happened. So they found out it was, you know, people weren't happy with these sections of their roof that were kind of fading away, and they found out it was the workers putting the roof on. They had the sun cream on their hands, and they were rubbing it on this steel roofing, and it was kind of eating it away. So they're looking into that, and they were saying that the sunscreen is also absolutely eating away this varnished timber as well that the workers are rubbing their hands on. So that was unbelievable. And these are nanoparticles, anatase, titanium dioxide in sunscreen as well, and they've absolutely confirmed that. So unbelievable. And people are putting that on their babies, and it's eating metal and timber varnish, stripping it away, and they're putting it on their little babies at the beach. And these young people are putting it all over their bodies. You know, I was thinking that, you know, there's definitely a connection there with the sun and how it reacts with the chemicals. Maybe that's on with intent as well. Everything they do to us is with intent. I mean, the nanoparticulates and nanoparticles and all these chemicals in the sun cream, for example, they just fall in there. It's like cigarettes. They put it in there with intent to kill you. You know, it's in broad daylight. So that was an incredible, astonishing study. And that's most Australian sun creams, you know. Are you going to put something like that on your skin? And they are every day. They're still doing it, you know. I'll link that through to you so you can read it. It's unbelievable.
The older you are, if you reach age 50, your body starts to produce less vitamin D. So, and also the darker skin you have, the more you need time in the sun to produce vitamin D. Now, you can get vitamin D from egg yolk, from supplements, from raw milk, from fish. But the best vitamin D source is the sun. And so vegetarians and vegans might want to spend more time in the sun. And you'll notice that as you develop more melanin, which is converting the UV into the heat, so your skin has its own sunscreen factor built in, which is the melanocytes. But as you get more sun exposure, your skin gets thicker. Skin is thicker in the summer than it is in the winter. It's got more structure to it. It has more biopolymers in it, and that's due to the melanin. So people tend to look better in the summer. They look more wrinkly, and they don't feel as good. If you have achy bones or you feel blue, the blueness has to do with serotonin, and that level rises with exposure to sunlight, and it falls when you don't have sunlight. And then vitamin D deficiency causes your bones also to ache. It also causes gastrointestinal issues. So anyway, and if you just Google vitamin D, you'll read that it can slashes your risk of cancer by as much as like 60% or more.
Amazing, yeah.
It has a great benefit on autoimmune issues. I know that friends with psoriasis always loved to go sit in the sun because their psoriasis felt better. And it has, you know, strengthens your body. And if you're sick and you sit in the sun, you're just probably going to feel better.
Absolutely. Yeah, especially after being in the ocean with the salt on you and sitting in the on the beach after you've had a swim. Nothing better.
So you're getting grounding, you're getting electron flow, transfer of free electrons into your body from seawater and sand. The earth is struck by lightning many times a minute, about 200 times a minute, probably a second actually is the correct fact. And there's a very mild electron flow across the surface of the Earth. And the Earth is, you know, giving us what we call free electrons. And modern lives have cut us off from the Earth. They've put us in rubber shoes. In fact, I heard recently that the song Rubber Soul by the Beatles is all about taking man off the surface of the Earth. But when you're in contact with the Earth, barefoot, as animals are, as plants are, you get this free electron transfer, and that's what helps so enormously in making the cellular fuel adenosine triphosphate. When you're not in contact with the Earth, your body has to make its ATP out of carbohydrate and fat processing. So this is one reason people are eating fats and carbohydrates like there's no tomorrow, because they've taken their feet off the Earth. So they're not getting the free electrons they're getting out of food, processing food and breaking it down. They're getting what's called donatable electrons. And you can imagine there's a massive difference between the number of free electrons you get when you're touching the ground and the puny number of donated electrons you'll get when you're digesting food. So you've got to be in touch with the Earth. And I also read, I've got to do a little more study on this, that there's a photon contribution in the manufacturing of adenosine triphosphate, that light gives you this electron transfer as well, as does falling water. So this is why the mixture of sunlight, the sand, which is conductive, it's silica, it's conducting that electron flow, it's part of the earth, and it's wet. Wet sand is even better than dry. And then you've got sun, sea, and land together, and your skin is exposed at the beach because it tends to be warmer there. So that's a beautiful bath in free electrons. And the falling water also releases, it's called negative ions. You might have heard that expression, but those negative ions are molecules that have an electron to throw out at you, and your body grabs all this stuff. And what the more free electrons we get, the more our body deposits something called ground substance, which is a clear, non-fibrous gel. It's an interstitial gel between the tissues themselves, interstitial tissue gel. And so when you go to the beach, your body drinks up billions of electrons from the air, from the water, from the land, and it stores them in what's literally called ground substance. This is why you sleep so well at night after the beach. You have your parasympathetic nervous system nicely regulated. That's your relaxation and digestion promoting aspect of the ANS, autonomic nervous system. We are in sympathetic nervous system overdrive. We're always in fight or flight, anxiety. So your body wants the parasympathetic nervous system to be doing a good job and to be able to regulate your heartbeat nice and slow and strong, so that your blood is charged with those electrons. But everywhere you have injuries or tissue issues, your body will pull electrons from that ground substance where it's banked the electrons after you've gone to the beach. So you actually will be able to do cellular repairs better the more you touch the ground and you're in daylight and you're near falling water. So that's my little lecture.
That is fascinating. Absolutely. I know you love the beach as well, so you know more than anyone. I guess you try and go every day as well. Yeah, that's fascinating stuff. Amazing. Amazing. I hope people absorb that in. And we've got about 15 minutes to go, but biological darkness, we look at this. Have you been able to, of course, you know, you're in California, I'm in Australia, we have a lot of sunshine, and we're used to that here. Let's talk a little bit about those countries that have the darkness, like Norway, Sweden, Finland, Canada, I know Alaska as well. Parts there, they have that 6 months of, if that's correct, of this darkness, dark winters. That's hard for people, you know, here to understand that they go through that. I know, countries like Finland have that very strongly, and there could be a lot of higher rates of depression and stuff like that. What's your idea on how the body reacts to this? Does the body ever adapt? to 6 months of darkness. How do these people sort of get through? And what do you think the impact is on their bodies in that 6 months to live like that? It's as I say, I've not been there, so I have not been to Europe or Canada or Alaska to see that. Excuse me.
First of all, the people who live in the northern latitudes in Nordic European countries are very pale.
They don't need a lot
of vitamin D. Secondly, they're cultures that have traditionally been very heavy on dairy products. And that's a very strong source of vitamin D, as is fish. The fjords of Norway. These are countries surrounded by tremendous amount of water. The coastline is huge because it's all, you know, wiggly in and out. Look at the coastline of Norway, for instance. So these people, number one, they don't require as much vitamin D as somebody in Black Africa, for instance. And that person has a lot of sun, naturally, because that's a more equatorial. The sun passes over the equator. If you want to do the flat Earth map, the sun passes over the equator twice. It spends twice as much time over there as it does in Australia and in Norway. It's only up there once. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So the people who are living up there have the paler skin. They don't need as much vitamin D. Their diet is very heavy in milk and cheese and eggs, and they've got lots of fish. So they have good vitamin D resources for those dark months. Now, what's interesting is how many people, apparently, if you live north of the latitude of Atlanta, Georgia, you can figure out what that is based on where you are. You will not make any vitamin D between the months of November and February. So what do people eat during the winter? First of all, they eat more carbohydrates and fats because they need those electrons coming from food since they're not getting them from sunlight. And it's cold. They can't put their feet on the earth as easily because it's uncomfortable. So that's why the wintry diet is always heavier and it's richer. And it's richer particularly in some of these what we would call fattening foods or high-calorie foods, but that's for a reason. So, you know, I predict there's going to be a terrible problem as you move the dark-skinned immigrants into Sweden and Northern Europe. They're going to start having terrible health issues because they will require much more vitamin D than the normal Swede or Finn needs. And then you look at people in America, the college students, the people who live north of Atlanta, Georgia. Everybody takes cruises in the winter. Spring break is always to Miami or someplace where it's warm where you can make vitamin D, right?
Mm, yeah. Easy. There you go. It's weird because I've met a lot of, I guess they tour a lot, but I've noticed with, you know, of course, you know, in Sweden, the Swedish girls and stuff, they're very pretty. I know ladies from the Netherlands, they're very tanned and blonde. I see a lot of mainly girls from Norway and traveling around. Maybe they just go to countries that are warm. I don't know when it's their winter. I don't know. But I've seen like a lot from Sweden and that part of Europe around, and they're almost golden tanned and blonde.
Get in the sun, many of them have the ability to tan.
They seem to get a beautiful tan, yeah, all the time. I know some people and they're very tanned all the time, but they don't go to the beach much.
You need to ask them where they get that tan from.
It's weird. I've just noticed it.
Tanning bed. I mean, it could be. There. You can even buy things, you know, in health food stores like walnut oil. That's dark, and you can rub that into your skin, and it'll glow. It'll look like it's tan or darker.
Yes.
So, yeah, the darker skin tends to look a little bit, it gives you the look of better health, you know. The very pale skin can be quite beautiful, but it also, when people have very pale skin, they're usually in their in the throes of winter and the poorest health that they're going to be in for the duration of the year, because they don't frolic as much and they don't have that electron contribution from natural forces.
That's right. I've seen that so much. Because our heritage is kind of a little bit English, Scottish, Irish sort of thing. And that's a lot of people in Australia are Irish, Scottish, English sort of heritage. And I'm noticing a lot of English people, UK coming here and from London and stuff, coming to want to live here. But it's quite tough with the visas. And I've just seen so many in the last year or so coming here. And they're coming over from places like London, looking like walking milk bottles, you know. It's quite harsh. Can be harsh here for them. They get burnt, for example, to get used to it here. If they're just on holiday, that's fine. But I've seen a lot of them get very burnt. You know, the mosquitoes, the insects, adapting to the environment in Australia. You know, I heard of, you know, except I can use tea tree oil for everything. We used tea tree oil when we were young kids for absolutely everything, you know, just put it on anything, it works. But I heard that was causing problems in parts of Europe because they're so sensitive. And people coming here from the UK, they're very white, very pale, sickly looking. And you see them here after, you know, living for a while, and they're all different looking. They look much healthier, much tanner. And I noticed that, of course you do. People who live on the coast, people who surf, young kids who surf, girls who go to the beach every day, parents who walk, elderly people who swim in the pools, public pools, whatever, who grow up on the coast, always look bigger, stronger, and healthier. Always look healthier, and these people change after living here.
Keep in mind that over the last few decades, the last few generations, the onslaught of health problems, the decline in overall the public health has been notable, and that's because we've switched from a farming, agrarian culture to an industrial culture,
right,
which means indoors, which means less sunlight. So yep. These Brits that you're seeing and these Europeans looking like walking milk bottles are seeking the warmer, sunlit climates to retire in or to spend as much time as they can in, because naturally they know on an instinctive, I call it the level of the biopsyche, that the sunlight is going to do them good.
That's
they
right.
Know that the environment they've been spending the last few decades in has deteriorated their health because it has been an artificial environment. It has taken them off the land and it has brought them indoors and in a, you know, in latitudes where they really need time outdoors. They need the raw milk, for instance, the non-pasteurized, the whole pasteurization, the whole, you know, you could call it the, there's a mechanistic process that's being enacted on all of our foods that preserves it, flash pasteurizing, for instance, to kill bacteria. These are vital bacteria, I'm finding out, to build immunity and strength. And to take them out of these foods, it's changing the whole spectrum of health in the population. So that's why these people are coming to warm places. That's why they all go to, I mean, San Diego had booming tourism for this last week because everybody from the colder climates was coming to spend time here. And unfortunately, of course, we had chemtrails, but at least they were getting even more light in a latitude where they could make some vitamin D in between the chemtrails.
That's right. Jeez, I could talk to you all day. You're mentioning milk. We have in Australia the world's first safe to drink raw milk. It's cold pressed, so unhomogenized, unpasteurized raw milk, but they're cold pressing it now because that's what people want. And I've had it. It's very nice. You get the top of the bottle's full of cream, and it does taste like proper milk. So yeah, that's amazing. And that's incredible. I can't imagine with people in London, for example, you know, living that really busy lifestyle, working in an office, you know, going to the pub after you know, smoking, drinking, go to the pub, going home, living indoors so much, the constant rain and being cold and being inside so much. You get so many shows now where all the shows, all these retiring Brits going to Spain and all these places where they're looking for a place to settle down and retire, because, as you said, they know deep down, yeah, they're missing something, and they're not healthy, and they're going to feel better if they go to those places. So that's exactly right what you said.
Yeah, and they're also famous for hot water bottles, and I want to put that tip out, because hot water bottles have gotten me through some very cold winters. People think that California is warm, but it isn't. California has a very drastic spread of temperature on a daily basis. Some nights it can be in the low 40s or high 30s, and then during the day it's up to the low 70s. And that's hard on your body to start with, but when you have houses that aren't well insulated, that are only really built for 3 months of cold and 9 months of nice temperate weather, people don't have great heat. Some of the newer houses have furnaces and nice HVAC systems, but the older houses and the smaller houses tend not to have heat. We even have in California windows, these slatted windows that don't properly close, and you feel the most horrible drafts in the winter, and everyone's got tile floors, there's lots of glass. So you end up very cold at night, and you have to kind of get outside during the day to warm up. Sometimes sitting on my deck is the warmest I'm going to be all day long. Otherwise, I'm wearing boots and fleece and scarves and even hats inside in December and January and February. So hot water bottles, what they do, they're so cheap. You fill them with the hottest water you can stand, then lay them on your stomach or throw them in the bed before you jump in at night. And I have decided that hot water bottles create vasodilation, meaning they dilate the capillaries, which are the end of the road of your vascular system. And capillaries are very, in your skin. Your veins and arteries get smaller and smaller and smaller as they branch farther and farther out. So when you have this nice dilation going, because you're able to move a hot water bottle from your feet, up your legs, you can put it on your stomach, your chest, your capillaries open up, and the exchange of the nutrients and the waste removal is all that much better. So when that happens, it kind of gives you a health boost. And it can get you through some cold nights. It can make you much more comfortable in bed. You won't be all stiff and curled up with your toes freezing by morning. You can even get up during the night and refill your hot water bottle. You can put an electric kettle in your bathroom and you can heat the thing two or three times. So I think there are tremendous health benefits in the use of hot water bottles. If you don't get enough sunlight, really, this helps. And I wanted to say I learned it from someone who came from the British tradition. I had a roommate, and she used a hot water bottle. So you said you use them as well. Very cheap, very wonderful thing to have around.
I love them. We got lots. The only problem was just a couple of kind of cheaper ones broke around the spout there, which can be a little bit dangerous. So I think maybe chuck them out after one winter, because they're so cheap. Get them for the one winter and then get another one the next winter, because I kept it, and a couple did break at the ends.
They do break if you abuse them. You're supposed to put not very warm water in them. That's no good. I don't like that. So I tend to put much hotter water than they Yeah, and that will degrade the rubber a little bit. But, you just keep an eye on them, and you'll notice that they're getting a little bit used, and change them every winter if you need to. But they are wonderful. So I think that vasodilation, you can move it all over your body. You can really get comfortable and get some good nutrient exchange and waste toxin removal going.
Absolutely. They're amazing. I get a little bit of, I think it's sciatica, just lower kind of, a little bit of lower nerve pain in my back, and I put it on there. It's it really helps so much. The hot water bottle, that's what we use. I really do. After speaking to Jim West, I've had on a lot. I do absolutely believe now that in some of the electric fans and the air conditioning and the electric hot fans make you, damage your immune system and give you the flu symptoms, make you sick. It gets really cold here as well, so I did get a good gas heater, which we just try use minimal, but I just try and rug up with that hot water bottle. But yeah, as you said, people think Sydney, for example, would be warm all year. It ain't. It snows like an hour from Sydney, and those winds come from the west. It's very, very cold here in the winter. It can get extremely cold. And, to the point where it's uncomfortable here, and I don't like those electric fans. I think they're making people ill. And then they're saying they got the flu because it's cold. absolutely, I use the hot water bottle, even a couple, and I think really good when it's very cold. I just rug up a little bit more now. And I also put a couple in the bed, and I like to put a hot water bottle at my feet as well. So your toes
That's
are touching.
Right. That's the secret. Put one at your feet.
I do.
Well, you might kick it off the bed, and then you have to go and fetch it.
That's all right. I don't mind. Put a string onto it so you can pull it back up.
There is an idea. You can be the hot water bottle guru. I was going to add something, but I cannot remember what it was because you were so excited. I'm so glad you like the hot water bottle.
I love the hot water bottle.
Principle. Here's what I wanted to add. It is not electrified heat. It's not like an electric blanket that you plug in and you're in an electric field. Hot water bottles are soft and comfortable, non-electrified sources of heat. So they're really good. And the heat will last for a while.
That's right. Yeah, it'll get you through the most of the night. And then once you're deeply asleep, they just sort of warm down. And I still find by the morning they're just warm, But how cheap for a couple of dollars keeps you warm all winter. You can carry it around everywhere. Some of them you get these groovy little covers for them as well.
Soft covers. And that will cut down the
heat. It will. Some people just, it's a bit much for them. But I'm like you, I like it really hot. It doesn't bother me. But some people get a bit, it's a bit too hot. But I think you do need them really hot. But there you go. And that's something that we've done here naturally. Really strange. My wife did that. It's just naturally hot water bottle. It's cold, I'm getting the bottle, that's just something that I did straight away for years, and my parents did as well, and my grandparents. If I look back in our family, everyone's sort of used them. I know my grandparents did as well. It was just in the winter. They didn't have the heaters or anything on. They would have the bottles. There you go.
There you go. I mean, seriously, more people should buy hot water bottles. More people should have them. You have to be a little careful, but like spilling and all that.
Absolutely.
But anyway, so Adam, I thank you for the opportunity. We've done our hour.
We've done our hour, yeah.
Yes.
We will mention your site now. Jeez, this biological darkness thing, I think we need to do another show because I'm thinking these people, I've done a show with you about them, with the Dumbs, with a deep underground, bases that these people are, they like being underground and they like the darkness and they're creating this darkness. They're child molesters, they're satanic or in their nature. Everything they do is dark and evil and sinister and disgusting. These elites, as they call themselves, and these people who are aligning themselves with this, and then it makes me think at the end of the day, what are they or what are they answering to here? That's an interesting subject indeed. Because it's very sinister to me, this. Anything that wants darkness, and cockroaches feed in the dark, don't they? Catch them in the night, you turn the lights out, they come feeding on everything, And that's what they are. Makes me wonder what these people are, Sophia,
My site, the best way to get to my site is sophiasmallstorm.com. That will take you to my blog page, and there I post things that I find of interest. You will find, you have to scroll down now, the Alexander Wunsch interview on photobiology, and you can Google him. But I think that will help people understand this biological darkness thing a little better, although he doesn't relate it to Luciferians and perpetrators of chemtrails and other noxious agendas. But I did an interview called Biological Darkness and the Sepsis Agenda with the Sage of Quay, yep. Mike Williams, and you can link that to the show that we've done, and then that will give people a very big background in all of this. And also on my podcast page, I've posted that, and I've posted a few other shows that I've done that kind of go into the depths of and the territory that you're claiming I'm moving through very fast. But I can't really help that. It's just a matter of waking up and saying, oh, I think this connects. And then Sage of Quay is always very nice. He does shows with me on these things.
That's right. And so about the sky.com, that's what you're referring to as your main website now?
My store is Avatar Products, A-V-A-T-A-R. That's where you can find the sunscreens, magnesium cream, iodine. These are all things that have worked for me. And I've said in other shows, I'm not in the matrix. I don't have a job where I work in the matrix and I further these dastardly agendas. I simply share what I have discovered that has worked for me with people like you. And if something is in my store, it's there because it has worked really, really well. My best sellers are the magnesium cream and the iodine, but the sunblock is selling. There's a body wash made with zinc oxide that gives you, you know, SPF2 built into your skin. So you have a little bit of natural sunscreen. You can put this on your arms and your chest and your face on a daily basis in the shower and rinse it off. And then you get zinc that actually gets floated into your skin. And it's a good thing to have a little bit of that if you are fair skinned. If you are in a place like California or Australia where you are, Adam, and you're of Nordic European heritage, then something like that would be something you could use, and you don't have to worry about carrying sunscreens around.
No, you've hit the nail on the head. I've studied this for years, and you're mentioning magnesium. I use, you know, zinc. You're mentioning iodine. Same. That's powerful stuff, man. Yeah, I use the magnesium as well, the oil. Pure magnesium oil we get in Australia as well. It's amazing products. Just rub it on your skin every day, a couple of times a day, yeah.
It's also a very good natural deodorant. It's antimicrobial.
Fantastic.
You can spread it under your arms, and it changes the microbiome in your armpit. It will chase away the odor-causing bacteria, and you won't have as much issue with BO, as they call it in America. But the best thing about it is your lymph glands are right there, and the magnesium can go right into the lymph, and your body gets magnesium. Body will take magnesium from transdermal absorption, topical absorption, better even than it will orally. Because one of the things about taking magnesium orally, I found out, is magnesium moves smooth muscles. It relaxes muscle tissue. So it promotes smooth muscle motility movement. So that means if you take magnesium orally, you're going to end up having diarrhea because that's what your intestines are, smooth muscle. And then you'll lose the magnesium you just took, plus a whole lot of other nutrients. And your magnesium will not have a chance to travel all through your body because all your cells really like magnesium. It's the dominant ion inside the cell, and it's responsible for, I've heard, up to 500 or more biochemical exchanges. It's as important, then, you could say, as sunlight. It's in that category of must-haves. So, and the sicker we are, the more challenged we are, the more we need magnesium because it's a deacidifier in the bloodstream, and acidic blood is a consequence of being chemically challenged, having a polluted body that's breaking down. So anyway, that's another little lecture.
That's right. I'm going to just mention your newsletter as well, because people can donate to you $50 a year and get that information that they won't get anywhere. Will they? That's information you're not going to get anywhere from what I've seen. I haven't seen anything like that. No, it's very, very unique. It is.
Yes, on my website, you can get there by aboutthesky.com or Sophia Smallstorm. You'll see a little icon on the left that says newsletter. Click here. You can read samples. And it is a $50 donation. I ask for a little bit more from foreigners because I send it by mail. It goes by mail, and this allows you to read it at your leisure. When you get things by email, the newsletter is 6 single-spaced pages every month, and people will start reading it and they'll stop. So it's easier to send it in the mail than you can collect it in a folder, as many people do, which is very flattering, and I thank everyone who does that.
You send it in the mail?
Yes.
To everybody?
I send it in the mail, yeah.
So you're just like at home just putting in the envelopes and sealing them up, and off you go?
That's right, Adam. I do not have a staff, as many people think.
Do you handwrite the mail? Yeah. Mail?
The newsletter labels are printed, but every package you get from me, if you buy from my store, that's my own hot little hands, wrapping everything up, writing the address, putting the postage on. No, I'm alone. This is it. It's a one-stop shop, one-person operation.
Where do you get that, folks? It's good, and of course that it supports you as well to keep this going. And so I put that up, and your podcasts are absolutely unique. Like this one, you're doing podcasts that are like a unique fingerprint indeed. You're not doing podcasts like so many out there. These are really unique ones. MK Ultra up here. I noticed you had John Rappaport on as well. He's a great guy.
That show was very interesting.
He's a really interesting man.
Yes, I did not realize, but John Rappaport is now 78 years old. He said this show.
Yeah.
He shows a picture of himself that's a lot younger. But John Rappaport has arrived at some ways of thinking that I think are really important.
He has, someone who's
lived that long, and done what he's done, I think that we should listen to his suggestions. And I've got to start reading his books, but I was very happy with that interview. It kicked off some ways of thinking in me that I started to use, and they actually worked.
That's right. Yeah. I just noticed that. Yeah. He is great. I've had John on a few times and say hello to him on the email. He's a very, very sort of quiet guy, and he goes about his business and his blog, and he puts out really interesting stuff as you do. So people can go and listen to your podcast. You talk to David Deese, incredible illustrator. He does the most amazing artwork. I was blown away when I saw that, so I downloaded that. I always put his stuff up. He's really incredible. So anyone can go through your podcast. There's just so many there of all these great people that you speak to that you're not going to hear too much of, and as well your great interviewing style. So your website's a wealth of knowledge and a fun place to go and a great place to buy little things and read and get the newsletter. So great work.
Thank you, Adam. That's all very nice of you to say. Well, wishing everyone a happy new year. I don't know when you're going to post this show, but
today.
Happy new year.
Yep.
Let's hope that we can march into the future with more energy and better results, right?
Absolutely. Positivity. I'm going to try and stay pretty safe. Okay, thanks, Sophia. Thanks to all our listeners out there for this year. Hope you have enjoyed the shows. Have a good new year. Stay safe, stay sane.